So tonight I'd like to deal with some issues related to what you might broadly call body life. And so I hope if the Lord stirs up any questions in you while we're going through this, that you'll get them out on the table, because, you know, this is really fundamental stuff that bodies of Christians historically definitely have problems in a lot of these areas, and every group struggles with these kind of things. So there's no use burying our heads in the sand. I'm going to go through some quotations from a book called Caring, A Biblical Theology of Community by Thomas Dubay. And it's without any question the most profound book that I've ever read. And it may not have, if you read it, it might not strike you that way, but it did to me. And if you look on the internet to buy it, it's generally between $25 and $50 per copy, so it's hard to find a reasonable version of it. But anyway, but it's a profound book, no matter how you slice it. And I've just taken some quotations in a section where he's primarily talking about the concept of listening and the importance of listening in a caring community. When he calls his book Caring, he basically defines love as caring. In other words, when you boil it all down, to love someone is to care for them. And of course, caring has a whole range of activities that would be involved. Everything from confrontation to comfort and tears and the whole nine yards. So in this book, he covers a wide range of the implications of caring for one another. And this section here has struck me over the years, and I just wanted to share these with you. Actually, it's hard to pick because the whole book, it's just utterly, it's the only book I've ever read where I couldn't read more than two or three pages, and then I had to set it down, and I just had to meditate on what he said, because it just blew me away. Mm-hmm. And I published the part of excerpts from the appendix of this book called Communication and Community in our winter 1985 issue of the magazine, because that appendix was just unbelievable. It's about, well, it's about dialogue and listening to each other, humility, all in prayer, a whole nine yards. It's just utterly wonderful. But anyway, I'm just going to read these, and we can just sort of comment on it if you wish, and I'll make a few comments from time to time. So he's talking about listening, and as you may recall, James says to all of us, be swift to hear and slow to speak. And a few commentators have made mention that verse may very well have in view the informal meetings in the early church, where some people were speaking too hastily and were enamored with the sound of their own voice and stuff like that. And so James is giving a little exhortation there to be swift to hear and slow to speak. So that's an exhortation that we all need to keep in the frontlets of our eyes. And those of us who have a propensity to talk more need to, you know, especially listen to that scripture, and only speak when the Lord is prompting, and not take over a gathering or whatever to just talk and talk and talk. But the point is, it's James emphasizes the importance of hearing. Be slow to speak and quick to hear. So that's the point, is we need to be listeners. We need to be open to what we could learn and gather from other people rather than our own voice. So here's Dubay. To care is to jump into the other's skin. It is to become the other in mind and heart. To live the other's interests. To care is to become one's brother, one's sister. We are interested when we are eager to listen. How many of us are eager to listen and slow to speak? Eagerness to listen is to one to another is an especially sound index of interest, because the other's statements are revelatory of his person. Perhaps the reason most of us speak rather than listen is that we are far more interested in ourselves than in others. A caring community is a listening community. He has a lot of other comments on listening that are in that appendix I mentioned, but this part was what I have, so we're using that. But in the other part, he mentions the fact that we don't connect this, I don't think, enough, but listening to people is really, as he says, it's a sound index of our love for them, because if we don't manifest a concern for what other people have on their hearts, and we either poo-poo it or ignore it or bury it or skip over it or laugh at it or whatever, that's an indication that we don't really love them. And Dubé says something like, if what my brother or sister is concerned about doesn't concern me, then I better doubt that I love my brother or sister. And that's difficult, because we all hear a lot of stuff, and we have to make some discernments about what we hear. But the point to not be lost is that if we hear something from somebody and our initial reaction is, well, I don't care about that, or that seems sort of immature, or why would that concern you? Then those are red flags that we're not really manifesting love to that person. Because if it's of concern to them, then shouldn't it be an immediate concern to us, even if it may not be at all to us? But if it is a concern to our brother or sister, shouldn't we at least process it and take it seriously and show our love to them by listening carefully to what they have to say and processing it? And if you poo-poo it or shove it out and don't even deal with it, then that to me is an indication we're not loving our brothers and sisters as we should. And this is certainly a problem I've seen a lot over the years, is that people in a body will feel like nobody cares what they say. And they've said things repeatedly, and it's like they're challenging the status quo or something, and their questions are maybe tough, you know, and they just get the cold shoulder all the time, and nobody pays any attention to what they have to say. So these are things we all need to, work on by the Lord's grace, is to have our ears open, that we're, because, as you know, Paul says that in the body we're interconnected. So obviously if you're promoted, then we want to rejoice with you. If you have a tough time, then we want to enter into your tough time. In other words, when one cries, we all cry. When one laughs, we all laugh. So in other words, we're in it together. So that means that any voice, any concern, any question that emerges, we need to take that seriously and not just, you know, give the impression that we don't, you know, your question's not really that relevant, you know. And it may not be that relevant, but the point is we still have to give it due course. And I believe in doing that, we will probably help people grow in how they share things and how they, express things in the body. Because if they see that you do care, that's the big hurdle. And I think that goes a long way. There's an example that along this vein that occurred way back in, I don't know, it was probably 82 or so in Massachusetts in a group. And they had a situation where a lady was in a pretty open sin, and the body had had confronted her in a loving Matthew 18 manner and gone to her privately and with witnesses. And the lady was basically unrepentant. And so they ended up bringing it to the body and saying, you know, we feel that we have to make a decision here regarding her, and she hasn't listened to us at any level. Well, this one lady was a very close friend of hers. She was an elderly lady, and she just didn't understand why they had to do this. And so when they had a meeting to make this decision, this lady expressed her reservation and just said, you know, with tears, you know, do we have to do this? Is this really what, you know, the Lord wants us to do? And so one of the brothers said, well, if you're concerned about this, why don't we just postpone our decision a week, and we'll meet with you during the week and we'll go over this with you again and see what happens. So everybody agreed to that. So during the week, a couple of brothers went over and visited with her. They went over the whole thing, you know, and told her and explained it to her. And after they got done, you know, she said, you're right. Yeah, this is the right thing to do. It's right on. I see what you're doing. Well, immediately she started crying profusely. And the brothers asked her, well, why are you crying? And she said, well, she said, I've been a believer for, you know, 60 years, you know. And she said, this is the first time that anybody took what I said seriously, that was willing to listen to what I had to say, even if I was wrong, even if I was not, didn't have the right perspective. The point is, you took what I said seriously, and I want you to know how much I appreciate that. So I think that illustrates the importance of processing things, even if the person is not in line with the rest of the body, and maybe pretty obvious that their position may be incorrect. Nevertheless, if we take time to listen to them and then share our perspectives with them, maybe several times, you never know what will happen. Just listening to people will often, you know, break some barriers. There's an example in the secular realm, the workforce realm, that's some of you will get a kick out of. I learned about this when I was in HR in a company that I worked for, and I was reading this HR magazine, and they had this illustration of a factory that was pretty, you know, dingy and wasn't exactly the greatest work environment. But anyway, the lighting was horrible. And the employees kept telling the management, you know, we need better lighting. You know, well, the morale was down, you know, production was mediocre and all that. And management kept poo-pooing their concerns, you know. Well, finally, for whatever reason, the management told the employees, we finally are seeing your point. We need new lighting, and we're going to get new lighting. Well, it was months before the lighting actually appeared. But the productivity shot up and the morale shot up. So just the idea that the employees saw that management was listening to what they said helped them do better. So there's something there about listening. And it's a powerful tool, and not just a tool, you know, as if it's manipulation. We're talking about a spiritual exercise that we do with one another. Listening is so, so important. And I think that's why James says to be swift to hear and slow to speak. Any comments you want to make?
I think we listen to those that we perceive to be important, and it's just strictly on a personal level, because we all have people in our lives at work or whatever that when they show up, it's like, and it doesn't matter what they say, their mouth is moving and you're not hearing a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now, most of the blame is usually on them because, like me, they just don't know when to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if there's somebody that you pay attention to and listen to, either you perceive their importance or it's going to make them, their perception, well, there must be something about me, so I'm important to him.
Mm-hmm.
And just by listening, because there's been people who I think, well, he doesn't care a thing about me, but ask me a question and listen, and I like, wow,
you know,
it made me feel good.
Right. Yep. Well, we're going to actually come to that point on the second page, but yeah, that's a great point. Yep.
What about in your gatherings or whatever? If Boyd was passionate about ping pong, extremely passionate about ping pong, so every meeting he brings ping pong magazine and reads an article from it, do you still continue to to listen and
where that was? I wrote that down too. What is that line between
and
not harming that?
Right.
And then also the meeting not being, that shifts totally off of Christ.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the $64 question. Right. So it's easy to answer, but it's not easy to apply. But I think you guys can get the drift. And every group wrestles with this, trust me. So there's a group in Indiana where there's a brother who he's getting better, but like 3-4 months ago, every gathering, you know, he would talk about Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and would make a big spiel, you know, about, you know, and the other brethren that are sitting there are just not interested in hearing that in the gathering of the saints. So those are things where you have to, number one, you can't let a person like that ruin your gatherings time after time. And there is a place, of course, for long suffering and all that, but between those two things, you have to probably maybe talk to that person privately over coffee or something and just try to help them, you know, understand that we're coming together around Jesus and we want him to be the focal point. And there's nothing wrong with talking about our political views or something in other settings, but when we're coming together around Jesus, that's what we want to be the focus, not political views or other many or ping pong magazines or anything. So it's definitely a problem, and every group tends to have an issue with it, and how you deal with it in each case probably will vary, you know, in terms of how you pursue it. But another better example overall would probably be people who have a doctrinal hobby horse, and so when they get together with the group, you know, they feel constrained, you know, to bring up the rapture every time they come together, or bring up their view of the millennium, or, you know, something, some view of prophecy or whatever, and they feel compelled, you know, to keep bringing that up. And so those are things that person needs to be more sensitive to the body, because what they're doing is potentially ruining a great time together. But on the other hand, the group doesn't want to come on like a bulldozer over him and make him feel like he's totally not wanted, or his voice isn't important. So, you know, between the middle there, you have to confront, but you want to do it in a way that encourages them to focus on Jesus and not on their hot button. So how you work all that out is going to be a razor blade walk, but it needs to be done, because and obviously sometimes the person wants to focus on Christ but is hindered by some other things. But then there's other cases where the person doesn't really want to focus on Christ. He wants to focus on his hobby horse. So again, you have to sort of discern the heart of the person. Are they essentially my phone doesn't usually work. I better turn it down. So you get my drift on that. I mean, how you work all this out, you just have to ask the Lord for wisdom. But you would think if a person's heart was in the right place, that they would at least, if the brethren appealed to them to be more Christ-centered when they come together and put aside their particular viewpoints, you know, you would hope that the Spirit would work something in them. And but there are certainly cases. There was one case where this guy had a hot button, and so he kept bringing it up, and the brethren kept saying, you know, it's okay for you to believe that, but we really don't want to hear it every week, and all that. Well, finally what they did was, they said, we're going to give you one session where you can have the table, give us your best shot on this on this thing, and we're going to weigh it, and if we come to the conclusion that it's not something we want to embrace, or it's not that we want to put it in perspective, will you submit to our discernment, or what? In other words, how are you going to react to that? Well, he said he would do it, so he gave him his best shot, he presented it. They came back to him with different perspectives to challenge him and stuff like that. And as a result, in this case, it worked out well, because having done that, he was able to drop it. He realized that he shouldn't be pushing it when he saw that the folks had other viewpoints that were challenging and all that. So that worked out well, but it doesn't always work out well, because some people will just leave if you don't want to hear their particular hobby horse. They'll just go. Well, I think you have to let them go if their hobby horse is more important than Christ. Maybe they'll come back someday, but you just can't ruin. It's sort of the idea of a little leaven leavens the lump. In other words, you can't let you know, this kind of thing sour your times together. That's the bottom line.
Several years ago, we had a woman come, and she was in her holiness uniform. That's back when Rob was here. And that's funny, I don't even remember what the deal was, but every time she showed up, she, you know, it felt like she was butting heads with all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember several of us would go after the meeting and just kind of talk to her, and she wouldn't let up. And I talked to Rob, and he and I said, you know, we're probably just going to have to ask her just not to come back, because I don't think that she wanted to mix. I just felt like she was there to stir something up.
Yeah.
And thankfully, she just never came back.
Right.
But, you know, that's upsetting when you want to tell somebody, you know, you really just need to go somewhere else.
Right.
And
hopefully you don't have to do that too much, but there can be.
Because she would not have been satisfied until
right.
She was just sowing discord.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But listening is such a large part of any relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And just to listen, like it says, I like this line where it says, to listen is to jump into the other's skin.
Mm.
That's hard to do.
Mm.
I can't jump into it. I kind of have to crawl into it. You know, it takes a while, but for me to turn my attitude into it and see where they're coming from,
right?
What their concerns are. And when we have to deal with these hard situations, like the ones Tony and Terry has described, they are such good practice at putting this listening thing to a hard razor's edge test that I think they're good exercises, so that listening to other people in less dynamic situations becomes easier, maybe even second nature.
Well, I had a college course over 30 years ago, oral communications, and the first day, the definition of communication is the transmission and reception of symbolic stimuli, which I thought that was stupid. You know, I was 18 years old, but just because I'm talking doesn't mean communication is going on.
Right.
Just like a baseball game, unless there's a guy standing there with a bat, it doesn't do a bit of good to be pitching. So you've got to throw it out, and there's got to be someone there who's ready to knock it back at you, because if it's one-sided, it's not communication.
Mm-hmm.
It's just rhetoric and hot air.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Let's go on. The persons in community are vibrantly present to one another. a mere formality will never do. Concern is directed both to the community as a corporate group and to the individual in his uniqueness. In this community, there is not only question of members being proper and polite, even of conversing on a deep level of common interest. There is the question of being change among them, not only an acting change. There is a new relationship, a new vine flow, that of grace. We are weak, all of us. We are to find in this mutual enheartenment an antidote to our waywardness, to our being hardened by the lure of sin. The Christian must find the power to be what he is in the very midst of his community. The part he's saying there about being changed is a pretty, that's a pretty deep concept there, but obviously he's contrasting that with a mere formality will never do. In other words, most churchy things tend to be pretty shallow, and people shake hands and say, how are you doing? And then that's pretty much it. But when you're more involved with each other, it becomes a being change. It becomes, the new humanity that I talked about out of Ephesians 3:10. The manifold wisdom of God being made manifest in the body of Christ is a beautiful thing, and it has to go deeper. It involves that when one laughs, we all laugh. When one cries, we all cry. In other words, is that the interplay of our beings with one another. We never lose our uniqueness in the corporate, but there is something about the corporate that is much more than all the parts. Mm-hmm. And there's a synergy that occurs when the body is, as T. Austin Sparks says, the team perspective of the body, that is so beautiful and again a dynamic kind of atmosphere for wonderful things to happen. when he says that we're weak, obviously he's quoting the Hebrews passages there on, exhort one another daily, while it is still called today, lest you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin, but encourage one another daily. So in other words, the Lord apparently is intending to use the body relationships we have to, as it were, be sort of a spiritual hedge around us to help us not be lured back into the downfalls in the world. And that's something that I don't think people consider about church. They don't see it as a real antidote to anything, because really, again, it's pretty shallow. It's only when you can go deeper that these things really take on meaning. And I've said many times that I've read thousands of pages over the years about what people call the perseverance of the saints, that Jesus will not lose any of his people, he will raise them all up. But I've hardly seen anything written on the means that he has deigned to use in this perseverance of the saints. And Hebrews 3:13 and Hebrews 10:25, give the antidote, and that is that our coming together is designed both daily and whenever we meet, regularly as a group, is designed to encourage us, to help us in the battles that we all face in an alien world that we live in. So I think that shows how important it is, because he says in Hebrews 3:13 that lest you depart from the living God. In other words, the alternative to exhorting one another daily and avoiding the deceitfulness of sin is to leave the living God, and that's a very, obviously, the ultimate matter of concern that anybody would have. We wouldn't want to leave the living God. Well, if we don't want to leave the living God, then we need the body, according to that text. We need the encouragement of one another to be a part of our pursuit of the Lord till the end, all the days of our lives. And most books you read about what is called sanctification, we'll say, read your Bible daily, pray, and they'll go through a lot of things, but Usually they don't cover this. They don't say you need a community. You need a community of support. They don't focus on that because the scripture doesn't focus on those other things so much as this, the community of faith compared with Israel who wandered in the wilderness and most of them fell in unbelief. But now we're in the wilderness of this world and we need one another to help us go through the wilderness and reach the end with our Lord. So this is, you know, pretty serious business, this whole community thing. It's not just icing on the cake, it's part of the cake. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very important.
Well, something the Lord has shown me over the years, and it's reinforced in our group. I know the grammar is wrong, but Christianity is not something that you do, it's something that you be.
Mm-hmm.
And all the time, you know, Baptist church, you're taught and taught to do. Mm-hmm. You do your Christianity, which you should. I mean, that's it's there, but it was never been emphasized that you need to be a Christian,
right,
not do what a Christian does.
Right.
And although they sound the same, it's totally right. Different.
Yeah, well, as I've been talking about, it's the life of Christ coming to expression in us. It's not something that we're a performance that we're doing. It's Him, where He's the vine, we are the branches, and His life comes out of us as a natural, organic thing. Not as something we muster up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can have a belief in something and have no behavior that reflects it, and that's really the, you know, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people all day long can talk about their beliefs completely, but whether they actually live it out, you know, I'm very much speaking to myself there, but
mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's in the next paragraph. But we have already been told by the Master that without Him we can do nothing at all. With Him, we can do it all, which is to say that we cannot care, we cannot have community without the Lord living in the midst of the two or three gathered in His name. Now this page, the next page is actually from the appendix I mentioned that we published in our magazine. And this first paragraph mentions what you said, Terry. Hearing is not heeding. Receiving sound waves from another human person requires only a normal hearing apparatus and a sufficiently wakeful attention. Listening to that person is incomparably more complex, conditioned as it is by early home life, natural endowments, talents, traits, past experiences, preferences, choices. But most of all, listening happens only in the context of all the inscrutabilities of the hearer's freedom. Most of us easily assume that we listen to others. Perhaps, but perhaps not. We hear all the words and sentences, but whether we heed is another matter. One listens only when he listens sympathetically, that is, honestly wanting to find whatever truth there is in what is being said. Since no one of us mortals, affected as we are with original sin, is perfectly pure in his desire for truth, no one of us is exempt from some degree of closed-mindedness. It is only our God, who is truth, that can cure our reluctance to embrace all of his truth, however he speaks it. All of us, therefore, need to learn to listen. We need to learn to love the truth, even the painful truth, the truth that runs counter to our emotional preferences and our vanity. While it is true that only God can give the complete desire for truth, we need to cooperate with Him. I may consequently offer a number of hints on how to listen. And this is a part that has affected me deeply over the years. First of all, we need to be humble, small in our own estimation. I love this next sentence. Finding the solution to a mathematical problem is possible without humility, but finding God's will is impossible without this virtue. James tells us that God resists the proud, but gives grace and light to the humble. Two, we bring to the dialogue session a conscious awareness of our willingness to be changed by what is going to be said, without, of course, sacrificing genuine principles. One listens wholly only if he is willing to modify his present position, if the evidence warrants it. People who are set in their thoughts and determined not to change their behavior do not listen to contrary evidences. 3, we do not assume that while others may be closed, we are open, either to God or to others. Only he can unlatch the heart. Paul was one day proclaiming the word to a group of women at Philippi. In the crowd was a certain Lydia, hearing all that he had to say. Of her reaction, Luke observed, quote, "The Lord opened her heart to give heed to what was said by Paul." The Lord, not Paul, opened her heart. Hearing is not heeding, and the Lord alone gives the heeding. We need prayer to learn how to heed one another. And this also mentions the part Terry said. 4, we try to grow in awareness that the person speaking is important, even precious, God's beloved. We pay attention to important people. To the proud person, others are not important, and so he is not inclined to take them that seriously. Even more, we value the opinions of those we love. If I do not really care what my brother thinks, I had better doubt that I love my brother. And I cut it off here, but the last one he has is, I am helped by in attaining objectivity and listening by imagining that I am an outsider, one not really affected by the ultimate decision. How would I think and react if I were advising another person? The placing of myself outside the situation enables me to more easily listen with my whole being. So these points that he makes, of course, apply across the board for a whole lot of things, but especially in the area of listening. But again, I believe strongly that an atmosphere of humble people coming together before the Lord is a powerful context for wonderful things to happen. Unexpected things, surprising things, amazing things. But when pride comes into the camp, then, as we know, God resists the proud. So I think it's very important that all of us, obviously we all want to be humble, but we need to especially be humble with one another. We need to be humble in our gatherings. We need to listen, give deference, submit to one another in the fear of Christ. And when you do that, if you get people coming together who have no agenda except the Lord, that is a beautiful context for wonderful things to happen. That's all I can say. And that's, again, of course, groups struggle with that because you have people that have their agendas, they have their hobby horses, they have their hot buttons and all that. So there's always challenges. But if we can just come before him in humility, there's no telling what transformations will take place.
I think that's our blessing, because I feel like we pretty much start, of course, I'm gone at least half the time, but it's like a blank slate. I feel like when I sit down there and we get through singing and all that, it just goes silent, and really nobody has anything to say at that moment. It's mm-hmm. it's just a blank slate, and usually somebody will kick it off, and then it just turns into a volleyball match,
mm-hmm.
and that's so neat, and I think it's simply because we don't have these preconceptions or agendas and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, you're gone half the time.
Yeah. But I have had things, you know, I want to say this morning. And either I won't say it because it doesn't feel right, or if I do, it goes like a lead balloon. It just...
Right.
And so that... And I'm learning that as long as I'm talking, I can't be listening.
What other things strike you in those points on that page?
Goodness. You said it took you a couple days to digest
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, it is.
My first thought is out. Think of all the people that when you know, like you said, and not just our gathering, but homeschool group. Or
that's where I'm seeing the worst. Like when I'm out in the public dealing with people, I can see their lips moving, but that's not hearing.
Life's
hanging
on me both.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I just, I think of all the people I've probably hurt, and mm-hmm. and because I can see, it's like the little, I can see it from, you know, it's just flipping through my mind. Sometimes I'm not listening.
Right.
Yeah. And that, if I had, it would have been that, maybe that opposite world I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to concentrate on, because your mind will just float off sometimes. They're saying something you're not that interested in, you know. They might throw something in you was really interested in. You miss it. Because you wasn't even listening.
I have this limit that I know is not the spirit, because the spirit's limitless. But I have this, I will listen to you once. I will listen to you twice. I will listen to you three times. And I'm done. I'm done. I've heard it, and you're not willing, and I'm not. No, I'm done.
Well,
and I'm sure that's not correct.
It seems, I don't have it as much anymore. I don't work with, you know, the public as much. But it seems like a lot of times people, if they ask you a question or something, they wanted an answer from you, but they didn't listen to your answer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, I'm going to quit sounding like telling you, but they didn't listen anyways. You know? And if I can do it, I'm going to stay. No, what's the point? So, but, I mean, so I think it goes both ways as far as when you're dealing with people and they come to you wanting you to, you know, let me ask you a question, and you tell them the answer, but that's not what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So they just blow it off and move on, and they come back a week later and go, what about this? I said, you sat there last week. I had the same answer this week. Yeah.
I was talking to someone one time, and their little kid, I forget if it's mommy or daddy, whatever, grown-ups are talking, and we're talking, grown-ups are talking, you're like, and I was like, and so,
right.
You know, a lot of times, even though, yeah, they're just, you know, like fingers down a blackboard, we need to listen to what they got to say.
Right. Yep. The one about willingness to be changed, that's a biggie. But I think most of us in this room have had some, I think we were talking about earlier in the week, of aha moments where the Lord has revealed something to us that we've seen that makes us wrong about something for the last 10 years or whatever. And once you have an aha moment, it seems like it tends to open you for future aha moments. And but all of us, again, as I mentioned in one of the sessions about our comfort zone, and all of us tend to have a comfort zone, and once we get stretched, we tend to resist because we think, well, I'm comfortable here. I don't want more challenge. I don't want more whatever. So we really do have to be openness to evidence to change. And that's why we discern. We weigh things. And if we can't find a reason to question something or reject it, then maybe we need to embrace it, even though it has some pretty far-reaching implications. I mean, we've all in this room wrestled with what church is, and so obviously most of us have had a conception of what church was, and we began to have some aha moments, and then we began to see church in a brand new light, a new paradigm, and so we shouldn't think that it's over. We have more paradigms that probably need challenging, but the point is nobody's asking anybody to just sacrifice their brains or their spiritual discernment, but on the other hand, we have to assume that there are things the Lord still has for us to learn, and so we always have to be open to further light. The light, all the light has not come yet, and that's the way we should live our lives, is what light do you have further for me, Lord? And I'm open to it, I'm willing, if the evidence warrants a change. And this is definitely a spiritual mystery in a sense. I mean, I think of myself, you know, I've over the years the Lord has shown me so many things, and I always wonder why are you showing me this, you know, and why did so and so send me this book that I knew nothing about it and he sent it to me, and why did somebody send me this article, and you know, I'm always getting challenging stuff, and it's like, obviously it's not me, but it has to be said, I guess, that I'm open. In other words, I'm open to whatever the Lord has, and he has showed me more and more, and I have to be open to, I've learned things from, you know, Quakers, Charismatics, you know, different groups. I've not been closed. I've not said I can't learn anything from that sector. But the Lord has shown me things from all these different traditions where they had a nugget of truth in Christ that I would have missed had I not been open to receive that. And, you know, I look at some of the bibliographies in the dispensational books out of Dallas Seminary, and you look at their bibliographies, they have no books that challenge their position. It's all their own guys, you know. And you ask, well, why don't they have Gerhardus Voss in their list of reading? You know, in other words, they're not open. They're closed. They don't read other viewpoints, and they think other viewpoints are a slippery slope.
That's heresy,
to
brother.
To hell, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, we just need to be open to the Lord, and just, and again, doesn't mean we open ourselves to everything or anything. It just means that we're open for the light that He has, not darkness, but light. Because if any of us was to say, I have all the light, we would be liars. We don't have all the light yet. Mm-hmm. There's a sense in which we have all the light because we have Christ, but I mean growth light, more light in our growth. And so we really have to be open. And that's what a thing I see, you know, as a huge problem is that in most groups you have some people that are not really open. They're sort of closed and hard-nosed on certain things. And, you know, again, you have to work with that, because no group is going to be a perfect combo of people where everything goes hunky-dory.
But with openness, you've got to invite compromise, and compromise can be a very dangerous thing. And that's what I always struggle with. You know, yeah, I want to get on board with them, but there's too many things that I can't compromise. And so, you know, try to find common ground and all. And to me, it's hard. I have just turmoil in my mind trying to get on board with somebody to have even a discussion that doesn't involve some type of debate.
Mm-hmm. Of course, when I mention nuggets, obviously, if I get nuggets out of the Quakers, that doesn't mean that I have to get on board with Quakerism.
Right. Right.
So,
right.
In other words, I don't have to buy in to their whole system to gain some truth that the Lord has shown them. So, usually, you're not getting on board whole hog with anybody. You're just
right.
You're more discerning what is good in something that you can get Christ. More of Christ out of it. That's the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
As he said, you don't want to. He mentioned about not sacrificing any important principle. So that enters into it too. You know, like I say, I'm not open to anything, but I'm open in a proper way. You know, so in that sense, I would say there's some non-negotiables in my perspectives. But even there, I'm willing to discuss those non-negotiables with somebody with a view to listening to them. And if they have something I've missed, that's fine. But usually what they present doesn't convince me. I'm not persuaded by it.
But now, on the other hand, a lot of my core principles, which I've refused to compromise, I've since thrown away because I saw how
right.
stupid they were.
Right. Right.
And so,
right.
It, and again, it's this thing, well, I don't know. Gosh, I'm at a loss for words.
Well, that's a verse.
But I do struggle with, you know, how close to the edge can I go without falling off? And then this thing that I'm trying to protect, is it really right? Is it something that needs protecting?
Right.
I think that's the thing, you know, listening and then trusting that the Holy Spirit is capable enough to remind you and to help you discern what is the thing to let go of and what is the thing to, you know, I'll mess that up, but if I'll submit to the Holy Spirit, I think He's capable of sorting that out for me.
Mm.
If I'm willing to test it.
That's certainly being aware that we're walking in the Spirit and not listening in the flesh, because our flesh is going to lead us astray.
Well, this concept, oh, go ahead. This concept that you never finished learning is can be kind of disheartening, you know, because it's, I believe that's why there are so many different factions and denominations, is the human desire to box it up and finish it.
Yep.
And so I'm just so grateful that I don't have any problem talking with anybody about any baseline theologies or anything today, because I'm not going to get in trouble. I've taken myself a lot worse places and didn't get in trouble. God was with me when I wasn't with him, and talking theology with somebody ain't going to hurt me a bit. that the key line in there, and it's hard to, I can't do it myself. God has to unlock my heart. But to listen to somebody, I won't listen. He says, you will not listen, truly listen to somebody, unless you're willing to take in new information that might change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I can't do that by myself.
Right.
God has to unleash that.
Well, I think what we need to weigh is the things that we don't want to give up. Where did we get them from? Did God plant them in a heart? And if so, I mean, ain't going to budge. Mm-hmm. But there's things that man has put in there, but he's got a God costume on.
Right.
And so it looks like God did it, but man was behind it. And
I found that every,
round and round.
If you're willing to throw it all away, the part that's God-given won't get thrown away.
That's right.
It'll
that's
just
a good
stay.
Way to put it.
Yeah.
Even though I'm willing to throw it away, it won't go away if I'm honestly seeking.
In other words, if the things that can be shaken will go away, the things that can't be shaken will stay.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that we want him and that we're pursuing him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is all tricky stuff, because it's all boils down to discernment and prayer and waiting and discerning. So, you know, there's all these dynamics that come into every into play and all these things. So you just can't put it in a box. But all you can do is look at grids and perspectives to try to help us wrestle with these tensions that we live with. But number four there, that the person speaking is important, even precious, that's Carrie mentioned earlier. We listen to important people, but the point is, in the body of Christ, we're all important. We don't look at each other like, well, he's more important because he's a better speaker, or she's more important because she does a great job of cooking, or whatever. We don't look at each other like that. We shouldn't. In other words, all of us are important. Why? Because we belong to him. We are his beloved. We are his bride. Therefore, every one of us is important. So if any of you speak, then I should be glued in to what you're saying. Because you're like, you could be Christ speaking to
right.
me.
Right.
And so as I said before, everything that's said in the group is weighed and discerned. We don't take anything unilaterally. As if a pope is speaking or something. But on the other hand, every time we hear others speak, we do want to hear, weigh, and assume that there's probably something valuable here, rather than assuming it's waste. So, but the starting point is our recognition that all of God's people are valuable, important, and precious. Boy, once you see that,
mm-hmm.
that restrains you, hopefully, from poo-pooing them and, you know, who are they, or they're always saying that, or, you know, we all have the ways we write off people, and they're always usually internal, they're never written. We just have those little things that, you know, like you were saying, that certain people speak and you hear their words and all, but you're not hearing them really, because you're not really interested. So in the body of Christ, we shouldn't let any of that impact us. We've got to take seriously everything. Now, to give an example, like years ago in Massachusetts, there was a group that had a vision that when they got up, they started, they were all in the same neighborhood in the inner city, And so they were just all, it ended up being like 65 people were all within blocks of each other. And they had multi-story dwellings where families would live on each level and all that. But anyway, their goal was when they got to be around 65 that they were going to divide and just, you know, become separate. And then their goal was to keep doing that, you know, just grow and divide and all that. Well, when it came time to actually do that, though, it was very hard because you had all these deep relationships. And, of course, they weren't just going to separate, period. They would once a month get together as a big group, too. So that was an important part of it. But anyway, when they came to discussing this, they had a long discussion. And the bottom line is that the body generally felt comfortable with splitting. But there were two people that had reservations, and they were just torn about it, and they just didn't have peace about this decision. Well, so they just said, okay, well, we'll just work with you, we'll talk further, listen to you, all that. So I think it was about 2 weeks of just waiting and just talking with those two people, not a few people, not the same people, but all the people in the body were trying to listen to them and hear them out. Well, what happened was is that these two people ended up admitting to the body when they came together for their time again that everything they were concerned about was just pure emotion, sentimentality, if you will, for the relationships they had, and they realized that it was the right thing for the body to do. So they did it. Okay, but my point is that those two people were not scorned, they were not put down, they were not consigned to oblivion. They were listened to. They heard them out. And then in doing that, those two people realized that they had no substance. In this case, that's what happened. So, again, I think that's the dynamic of listening to people, is that sometimes when people express their concerns, we realize, of course, that maybe their concerns are valid and the rest of the body is missing something. So that's certainly a possibility. Or the people who are holding the reservations realize that really there's no substance to what they're saying, and so they just back off and say, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. So the point is regardless of how it all works out in the end, is that we process the people that have reservations and listen to them, and hopefully the Lord will bring unity and peace and consensus in the thing, you know, as you wait. And don't rush through with a decision.
Well, we wrestled a gorilla several years ago. He was thinking about having a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few people you could tell were really, they wanted a pastor. And a bunch of us were just led not to. And we found it's best not to wait till that gorilla goes to really stinking before you address it.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, Becky, of course, now she lives a lot closer to me, and there's other reasons, but, you know, she doesn't fellowship with us now, which I don't know if that's the reason or not, but, you know, it got to me an impasse. Maybe that was just my perception, but was it not an impasse? Kind of.
I think they exist sometimes, yeah.
Because it's like, well, this is the way I see it,
yeah.
This is the way we see it.
Right. Well, then in those cases, then again, you can hopefully part not with rancor, but with, you know, again, mutual understanding, because you've listened,
mm-hmm.
you've processed, and you've basically realized mm-hmm. that there are two different opinions here, and they can't really coexist. So then you just have to maybe move along in love a different direction.
Right.
And fine, you know, so go with our blessing. No problem. And that, again, that doesn't always work out that way, but that's the ideal, is to at least hear people out, so that at least you know there's a brick wall that's real. It's not an imagined brick wall, but you've actually realized that there's two distinctive positions, and the one side is not going to budge. So in that case, what are you going to do? You can't. There's no use playing games. You might as well just face the facts, which is sad, but that's the way it is.
Because myself, I desperately wanted to understand and all that, but I couldn't, and that I guess that's why I felt so bad, because I could not agree with her on that point.
Right.
That gorilla is not completely gone.
No,
that gorilla's still there.
But
there's
what,
still people
so how pressure. So how do you deal? There's still both sides of that issue there,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I don't think. I mean, I trying to coexist.
Mm-hmm.
The ones I'm struggling. I don't want to mention that. Or,
right. You can try to be generic.
Volleyball or ping pong.
Right.
No, but there's still antagonism there. There's
mm-hmm.
there's hurt, and it won't go away.
Mm-hmm.
Night. So how do you? That problem's there. Do you ask that problem to leave? Do you ask that? I'm just being honest. I'm not trying to be ugly. I want to know because that's something we deal with.
Right.
Because something like that does not need to come to a vote. That's not something that you fix with a vote. Because it's a thing. I mean, it's a deep felt conviction.
And to be honest with you, I don't understand. If this person is so dead set, I don't know if they're waiting around hoping that we'll change our mind.
Mm-hmm.
They would, obviously, it seems to me, be happier somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't go.
Right.
I don't understand that.
I think if they were that unhappy and they were that insistent on a pastor, they would go somewhere else. I have spoken to some that said, Lord hasn't told me to leave. Lord has not led me to leave here.
So I'm just going to stay
or
and cause you problems.
cause you grow. What?
You don't hear it a lot, boy.
Well, point me toward him. I'd like to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's all I want to say. I would like. I just stay listening, and I'm just not aware.
Really
I am.
Concerned.
You're right. I am not aware of that big of a problem. I know there are a couple of people I've heard voice their concerns.
Well, there's definitely still something there.
Oh yeah, but I didn't.
But
they haven't been hammering me, you know.
Is it
okay.
something
I guess they
discuss?
Do him
corporately
like that.
A lot of times it's a very sideways kind of thing, like we'll just be sitting in a circle and they won't even say it out loud, but they'll whisper it where certain people can hear. It's a really bizarre kind of thing. So that's hard to deal with. You don't know whether you call them out right there in front of you, excuse me, would you say that loud enough for us all to discuss? Or is that rude and unloving?
It's hard, to do it lovingly and not.
Yeah.
But this principle of waiting and postponing action for one holdout in the group is a very ancient principle that goes back a long way, and it's still embedded into some. You find spiritual groups that. Most of their, not church groups, but benevolent organizations and so forth, that have a steering committee, and the changes in policy for the group have to be unanimous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an ancient principle. It's in our laws. A serious criminal case decided by a jury has to have a unanimous decision. So that there's time to consider and listen to everybody's. You have to listen to everybody's point of view.
And I think that, that part of the problem is, although we may be willing to listen, maybe some of us have got to that point, but sometimes it's harder to speak it than it is to hear it. Because a lot of times, you know, my wife and I, that's probably the biggest thing. There's something that's just eating on me,
And I know that if I bring it up, it just, it's going to be turmoil. And so he thought, well, I'll just hold it to myself. But yet she'll say, well, what's wrong? Nothing. and so, and you know, we bring that out to a group thing, and it's hard for some people just to spit it out because that's just, some people are that way. My
mini discernment on your situation would be that you've already come to sort of a pretty high level of consensus on the fact that you're not interested in having a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are a few people who are still, if you will, hanging around who might prefer to have a pastor, it doesn't seem to me that you have to hold up everything and wait for them to come into your consensus, because they've already been sort of listening along the way. You can continue to hear them and that kind of thing, but I don't, it isn't like you're wrestling with this as a policy. It's more, you've already sort of have a practice in place.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing would be, do they have any evidence that would lead you to change your policy? And if they don't, then they need to quit bringing it up. Mm-hmm. And if they do, you're willing to hear it.
Right.
So again, if you were to give them the floor for a session and just say, give us your best shot.
Right.
And if they can't do it, and if they say, well, here's the reasons.
That might be good.
And then you guys all say, oh, thanks for presenting that, but you know, here's this, and here's that, and here's that. We're just not persuaded by your presentation. Well, then again, you might have to say there's sort of an impasse there. Now, that doesn't mean they can't come to your gatherings, but it does mean they need to, in a sense, sort of shut up about the issue because they've been, you know, you've listened, you've processed, and you sort of have to move on. You just can't keep holding up everything over two people that have no substance. I'm assuming that.
Right.
And if they do have substance, you're willing to hear it. But if they don't, you have to move on. And then they have to make a decision. Are we going to keep coming to something we don't really fully agree with, or are we going to go somewhere where we agree with it?
Mm-hmm.
So, but they're welcome to stay, but they shouldn't make an issue of it, you know, if they're going to stay, because it's been dealt with, you might say. It doesn't mean it's a final dealing, but it's a sort of a final thing. Or you've given them the opportunity, you've processed it, and you're not convinced, so you're going to move on with the way you've been doing things. So how that would all work out in the nitty-gritty in your situation, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But you can figure that out. But sometimes it would be better to maybe not give them the public floor, but to talk to them with several people on the side in their home or something. I don't know, but you would have to discern that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and some people just aren't going to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what.
Right.
Right.
And so one of the individuals I know that's, you know, being talked about, I think, would be just as disappointed if we had a pastor.
Or they were when we had one.
Exactly. So,
right.
I think it's just one of those things.
Right.
Just not a happy person.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're not going to be happy no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't wait around for that person to get happy.
Right.
Which is all the more reason not to hang back. And the pastor one for me is kind of easy because there's a lot of places. Pastors.
Sure.
So, I mean,
right.
Yeah, there are nine a dozen.
That's not that hard to find. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of one of those things. Because it's silly, because, you know, the answer, the response a lot of times is, well, we have pastors. You know, our definition of it is a little bit different.
Right.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like, we just don't have a paid one person, you know, standing on a podium. And so it's funny because, I don't know, like I said, I think what is the amount of time is that we realize that some people just,
well, again, a big question is, are these people open? Would they be willing to change with evidence presented? If you gave them my book, The Pastor Has No Clothes, would they be willing to process that and look at it and get back to you with what they feel where it's wrong or something? I mean, there's
so that's what that book is about, The Pastor Has No Clothes?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's honestly, you know, it's my personal take on it for a while has been, I think that's where we need to go. It's just a scary place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just afraid it won't be. You know, I don't like impasses.
And my biggest fear is someone will get hurt
yes.
and will lose fellowship with somebody. That's
yeah. And to me, that's what we're trying to avoid, is
right.
factioning up the ball. You know, it's a, I don't know how you
right.
walk.
Well, there's
that.
This line here in on the sheet. It says, people, we need to find out if these people are willing to change, or willing to listen. Are they willing to listen? It says people who are set in their thoughts and determined not to change their behavior do not listen to contrary evidences.
Mm-hmm.
We just determine by talking and listening to these people if they fit in that category.
Well, again, it's two-way. It isn't just them thinking differently than you.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, are they willing to listen to what you have to say? I mean,
right.
it's a two-way street.
There's
right.
a couple of situations where no, the answer to that is no.
Right.
They are not.
Right.
And
so,
there's a good 10-year history of
right.
no.
So if it's so again, like Terry said at the beginning, if communication is only one way, it isn't communication.
Mm-hmm.
It's only monologue.
Right.
And so there has to be two-way in order for it to be real godly communication. So you got a problem right there. I mean, if they're saying it's one way, I get to talk to you, I disagree with you, but you can't share evidence with me, I'm closed. Well, that's not a very good scenario for dialogue.
In one of the situations, you know, the situation would be closed because I am female.
Mm-hmm.
So they would not
mm-hmm.
be able to speak to me because I can't teach them anything.
Right.
Have anything to say about spiritual matters that is worth listening to.
Right.
So you can't, where do you go with that?
Right. Do you have any more unsweetened tea?
I can make some.
Oh, would you?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Well, you know, you just, I would be glad to sit down outside on the side with somebody else that wants to do it with me. And, you know, it can be male. I don't know who this person is. To be a couple, some
well,
males.
About three or four girls.
If they prefer to meet with the, you know, the sex of their choice.
Yeah.
And
what did you say?
If they prefer to meet with the sex of their choice. And
gender. He meant to say gender.
Male
or
female.
Yeah. And oh yeah, that could have been taken on.
I think could have.
Funny group.
Always got in the shadows, ain't he, Red?
You got to burn your mouth, didn't you?
But you know what, in defense of these nameless people, I don't think there's pride or obstinance. That's just the way they see it.
But my point was to deliver to them the consensus, the hard, you know, and it's, you know, listen to them, process it, go back to the group with it, and decide to deliver. Well, we understand where you're coming from. We understand your concerns, and there are many, many churches like that. And we hope you can stay. But this one is in all likelihood not going to change because it's unique, and that's the way the body likes it here.
Mm-hmm.
And,
and I think that, you know.
And we wish you wouldn't be disruptive or divisive or whispering innuendos, you know.
And I think that's probably just the place we haven't ever made it, mm-hmm. is to, as a group.
Well, one of them said one time when we were talking about it, said, does this mean that we'll never have a pastor?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't
mean
that.
Does that mean that you say, well, we're going to be led with spirits, you know,
mm-hmm.
wherever the spirit leads us? Well, she said, does that mean we will never have a pastor?
And I don't think anybody said that. I remember that. I said, well, you know, if the Lord leads us,
right.
I think we should, but I don't feel led.
Yeah.
At this time, the body doesn't feel led to everybody to be a pastor.
Mm-hmm. As a start, I'll be talking about that probably tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, we have no leadership, we have no rules, and there's nothing biblical. You know, thou shalt not have any pastors before me. You know, most of this stuff is very abstract and intangible. And is spirit led, and not that I'm more spiritual than they are, because they don't see it that way. It's just the way it is.
Right.
And
well, the bottom line is, you know, in many kinds of these issues, is that somebody's wrong, mm-hmm. and
somebody has to be wrong.
Right, and the two positions can't really coexist. So that requires, again, humility on both sides, and then the ability to process and listen to each other. So again, if it's only one way, you've already got a big problem. So you can approach them and say, are you willing to hear us? We're willing to hear you, but it has to be mutual. It can't be just you. But in a sense, I would say, you could even say, we'll let it be you only, but we're going to weigh what you say and we're going to process it. And then the question then would be, are you going to listen to what we say? And if, you know, I don't know, you just want to be loving in it and yet firm, and so that you're getting somewhere and not spinning your wheels. In other words, you want to process it, but you also want to get somewhere. And the only way you'll get somewhere is to properly confront it, get it on the table, listen, process, and then let's just say you end up with the same basic configuration, your group and these other people, and they're still stuck in their view. And okay, well then at that point, you can at least have a foundation to say, you're welcome to stay with us, but this is the way we're going to function. And then they're welcome to say, well, we're going to go find other pastors. Okay, so at least there's something there to go by, and it isn't nebulous and fuzzy and muddy. You know,
if you ever change your mind, welcome
right,
to that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you see a lot of that type of conflict in non-structured?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It usually comes up within 3 years. There's usually some kind of an issue that will come up like that, where you have a polarization of maybe a few versus the many, and so that's where it's very critical for that to be processed properly. Otherwise, you just end up with another split and hard feelings and all that kind of stuff.
Does it usually come as a result of like a power play? Because there's, you know, cream floats to the top, and there's a lot of type A leader type people who just push and just end up wanting to be in charge.
I would say that pastor wannabes would be a huge problem in groups like that are non-structured or simple.
Because that's what's strange about our group, because maybe I'm blind to it, but I do not see anybody. Does anybody perceive that there's anyone who's trying to wrestle? Probably just the opposite of anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's
the problem. We'd rather not.
We're all scared to death. To...
Right.
Well, if anybody steps up, and you know, for our group specifically, you know, if anybody starts to take on maybe a little more responsibility that's very visual to other people, the people who do want the pastor figure automatically flock to that person. Finally, here's our leader. Let's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so then everything gets put on the shoulders of that one person to, you know.
Right.
And so then, you know.
And then these people that kind of want to pastor have been with us from the very first of the group, and they're pretty attached to the group.
Right.
See, they still want a pastor, but they really love the group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I actually see it. You know, we see that there's two sides. I think there's actually three.
Yes.
I think
the right
those,
side.
There's those who are comfortable where we are and want to move forward in that. There are those who want a pastor, and there are those who are apathetic and don't care either way. So I think there's and that middle group doesn't care either way. Kind of flows back and forth between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
You know, so you don't really know where they lie.
What about the time, Rodney? If you could put me over there, so once you're going to pastor.
Right.
I've learned different that since then.
Right.
But you're willing to listen.
Right.
Because when Rob left, a full half of our group disappeared. The people who
follow pastors.
Yeah, I was starting to say that, but I thought that's maybe a little harsh, but it's probably true. So
it usually happens too.
Sure. Yeah.
But you know, that is the beauty. If we can learn to deal with this in a loving, spirit-filled way as a group, not as one person having to do it. We can learn to do that. That's the beauty of meeting like this, it'll bring all these things to the surface, and we can scrape off the junk and get down to moving forward in Christ, where it's, you could sit into an sit in an artificial environment for years and years and years and years, and you'd never see the dross, because
mm-hmm.
it doesn't come to the surface.
But it's so comfortable.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the group that does want a pastor is just reluctantly hanging on, thinking we'll eventually get it. You know, and we're the we're on the other side waiting for them to get it, and nobody's budging. You know,
or so. God is in the process of giving them like-mindedness with us.
Yeah, they might come around.
Well, that's the thing I see in this particular issue is that, in a sense, there's no pressure to force the issue. But in another sense, it would probably be good to deal with it in a proper way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you've got immorality in your midst or something. You know, it's a pressing, urgent thing. You got to deal with it right away. Because you guys already have a policy sort of going. So that's already there. It's just that you have a few that aren't on board. So I would just say pursue it as the Lord leads in a way to come to some resolution. But again, it's not like you have to draw a hard and fast line in the sand to force them out or whatever. That's not the point. But on the other hand, to deal with it in a proper way probably is helpful. That's what I sense.
I think that's kind of, honestly, but kind of where the group is at, I think we've all, several of us have kind of just felt the need, it's been laid on our hearts to address it. I feel like we've been very stagnant for a while in not addressing it. And I think the fear is we don't want to handle it the wrong way and cause division. You know, that's, but I think there's a big difference between approaching the situation not in love, causing division, versus following Christ. And I think just learning how to navigate through those two has kind of been our struggle. I think we definitely feel like the issue needs to get addressed. It's just what is the best possible way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We thought you were bringing your magic wand.
Yeah, right.
I think we actually had the discussion. Should we do it now, or let's just wait till John gets here?
Oh, we did.
Right.
And not that you
but miraculously,
magic
everyone
potion,
that...
but just...
Right,
see,
who would like to hear this has never shown up.
But you know, too, the ones that we are talking about, they very frequently go to other bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Go to other.
Absolutely.
So I don't.
Which, in my mind,
yeah,
absolutely.
That's
awesome.
What amazes me, I'm okay with it because I didn't used to be that way.
Mm-hmm. You thought we were all nuts anyhow.
Well, that's true.
We were too huggy for you, wasn't we?
We're still too huggy.
You're almost too huggy for me.
We toned down our huggy.
We know this.
Yeah.
It's number four.
Jessica said, yeah, woo, when I first met y'all.
Her family don't touch each other.
Yeah, we don't. I walk in the door, it's the video store girl.
This number four was we try to grow an awareness that the person speaking is important, even precious. I think that's something I'm myself am guilty of. I tend to, if it was anybody in this group who's going to say anything, I'm going to listen to it. If it's those who half-heartedly put forth effort,
mm-hmm.
I tend to blow it off.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking, well, we discussed that 10 weeks ago. Where were you?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's something I'm not guilty of.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but there's an element of truth in what you're saying in the sense that every time, everything we hear in the body, we sort of, using this word guardedly, put it in a hierarchy of acceptance, you know what I mean? So in other words, if somebody is an immature person, generally speaking, then if they say something in the body probably is usually going to sort of take it with a grain of salt, just in the nature of the case. That doesn't mean they don't listen, but they just consider the source. Whereas if somebody who's been with the Lord for 60 years is talking, you know, you're probably going to give a little more weight to it and listen to hopefully the wisdom. So we all make judgments about what we hear. The point is we got to be careful about rejecting something that might be good from somebody that we're not used to listening to. That's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And because the body always has levels of maturity, and we don't think everything that's said in the body is not of equal value. But it does mean that anybody who speaks from the body could have something that is extremely valuable.
Right.
That's the point. So we always need to be ready for that nugget coming from an unexpected source. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to miss that.
Well, and another thing, everybody that we've talked about tonight, we've invited them. You know, we've asked them to come and help us make decisions and be on the board, or, you know, and walk there, and they flatly denied it.
Right. Well, that's right. Well, that's good that you've done that, because it shows that you've extended yourself to them, and it doesn't mean you can't extend yourself to them more, but, I mean, it isn't like you've given them the cold shoulder.
But, you know, I think it's just like Jesus. I do really believe that, I think I told you earlier, and I can find milk in any bowl of Fruit Loops. And I don't screen things out, and I'm real open, and I don't write people off very quickly, and I'm pretty persistent about staying. And past, you know, I mean, just because I know what a lousy sinner I am, I just know how graceful God is to me, and I want to give that back. And so I'm typically pretty long-suffering, that's just kind of one of the things I can do. But this morning, I drew a line in the sand, and I said, I'm done with the situation. And it's not that I haven't yet, but I just was done. And but I have prayed today, and I prayed tonight before we started that God would transform my mind, and he brought all this listening stuff up. I'm not gonna draw a line in the sand.
But you know, even the Lord got violent. He got the whip and went to the temple and kicked over the crates of birds and animals.
But like John said, it's not like we have immorality in our midst. It's not that serious an offense.
Well, plus Jesus was doing there was not exactly the body of Christ.
That was religious
hypocrites.
Right.
But I guess the point I was making is, you know, the Lord, he drew a line.
Yeah, sure.
In wherever that line is, you know, we need to be faithful to it. Because whatever you compromise yourself, because nobody knows what my values are, but I know when I've compromised them, man, I can't stand me.
Well, about 8 out of 10 commandments were being broken in the temple. Now, that's serious.
Right.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm thankful that it's not a immorality thing. You know, no man is taking his father's wife or, you know, anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Why can't we all just get along?
You know?
I just want to love on everyone.
Well, I wanted to say that when people send me articles or I read any book, my approach to it is I will try to be persuaded by what they're saying. I don't care if it's Roman Catholic book, or whatever it is. I don't come to it, I'm going to criticize this book. I come to it, persuade me. And then as I read it, I begin to think, well, that's not very persuasive. That's, you know. So in other words, I think that's a part of being a willingness to be open, is that you approach something not to be critical, but to be receptive. But then as you go into it, of course, you see, wow, this isn't too good. And that's, so you may only find a teensy bit that you really think was good, but other cases you find a lot that's good, but then there's all this other junk. Well, even Dubé has in his book, there are statements in it that I can't believe he would say them, because they're so out of line with the rest of what he says. But I don't throw the whole book out because he made a few goofy remarks. Mm-hmm. If he read my stuff, I suppose he'd think I said some goofy things too, so that's okay.
Well, there are none of us that are perfect.
Right, that's right.
And the thing is to keep to listen with an open mind, like you say, reading the book. And when you're listening to somebody, the hardest thing for me to do is when I'm listening to somebody that I really don't agree with, I'm not, a lot of times I'm looking at them and trying to listen, but my brain is thinking about what I'm going to say when they shut up. Right? Mm-hmm.
That's a forming an answer before they're finished is one of the most common
issues.
I have a dog that just, she's never heard a word I
because she's thinking about what she's going to say when I get that.
Has anybody ever been to a doctor that does you that?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get through, and he automatically, in his mind, he's like,
right.
I've been to him before and said, no, well, what about this? And they'll listen a little bit more and jump to another conclusion.
Right.
But if you can catch yourself, I've got better at catching myself when I'm thinking ahead of the conversation.
Boy, it's
and
hard.
Bringing myself back into the listening.
Well, don't married couples face that, where the husband or the wife starts a sentence and the other one thinks they already know where they're going to conclude and gives an answer while they're still speaking?
Yeah.
And Dottie has to say to me, you know, can I finish my sentence?
If you let me finish, you know you've done answered it wrong.
Or when you just look at them and say, what?
When a woman says what, that means you have 2 seconds to give a better answer.
That's when you say, I was confused.
Yeah.
Semi-straight, honey.
That's right.
So we'll continue this tomorrow night. We'll go into some in Romans 14 and 15 and talk about leadership and that kind of thing, and we'll see what happens.
What time are they going to meet after? Is your house?
Same time.
5:30. I've got a doctor appointment tomorrow at 3 o'clock with Jeff Omer. I hope I don't have to wait 2 hours to get in. I did last time I was up there over 2 hours before I got in.
Well,
you still have time.
We'll pray that that won't happen this time.
Okay.
Yeah.
They'll
figure out how to get out of there by 5.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jeff will hang around there at 7 o'clock treating people.
Maybe at least just drive down with you.
And I don't know the way to Tracy's house.
Me either.
What's your address?
You can follow me. I'm coming from Mina.
I have been there, and I couldn't go back and save my life.
I bet you if you tried, you could make it.
No, I don't.
No.
$5.